Let's get to record. What are we up to? We're up to episode 3 of season 15 of Mentioned in Dispatches. And look, if we're into the fall, then you know somewhere in here we're going to have the conversation about the outcome of this year's Solo War and Historical Gaming Survey that we do in conjunction with Beyond Solitaire and my own worst enemy. Mike is here, and so we're bringing you the results of all that. So Mike is here because if we're doing solo wargaming, we have to have Mike. It is a contractual requirement. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
And if we're doing solo wargaming, then Ozarski is not allowed to be here. Also a contractual requirement. He is forbidden from joining us.
You know, can I just interrupt for a second to say I actually just listened to the podcast you guys did on what is canon, which again I have to agree with you guys, canon is not a good term to use in that. But I have to say, Liz did an outstanding job of defending solitaire gamers in that. Thank you, Liz.
Thank you. Also, I do enjoy having Jim around, even though he is wrong about so much.
He's misguided. We'll straighten him out one of these days.
If you don't like the term canon, it's Liz's fault. I'm telling you, she was the one. I even excerpted the podcast from last year where she brought up the whole idea of a wargaming canon. So I'm not taking the fall for this. Liz is the one that came up with the terminology.
Well, the thing is that we're not helping with that, though, because like by doing these top lists, we're basically giving people official community recommendations in a way of what they should play, thus creating a 2025
So you've become the thing you hate. I love it. I love it. This is awesome. All right. So for the folks that don't know where this is going, look, if by the time you're into season 15 of a podcast, you've probably heard a couple of previous seasons, but on the off chance you haven't, this was something that Liz and I had talked about, I don't know, like 3 or 4 years ago. And we finally got around to actually doing it 3 years ago and 2 years ago in 2023. This is the third year that we've done it. And that was looking at a survey of the war gaming crowd for their favorite solo and solitaire war and historical games, focused more on the war games. But if it's a deeply themed historical game that isn't all, you know, shooty bangy explodey kind of stuff, like that's okay. But what we were looking for, Liz, the survey is like the People's Choice 200 or something. What's the survey?
Yeah. So the People's Choice Top 200, it's actually going on right now. So if you are a solo gamer in general and you want to go submit your top solo games, you should go to the One Player Guild on Board Game Geek and do it. But basically, it is a long running top solo games list. And my number one complaint about it for years and years and years, whenever I do the commentary, is that there's not enough war games on there, and they just keep falling down the list. So one, if you're a war gamer, get your butt over there and vote. Thank you. That'd be great. I want to see more war games when I do the commentary. But also, we created this in order to like see what the war and historical gamers are playing, so that it's not just like another list of LCGs.
Yes. Yeah. And as a part of that, we've talked about sort of solitaire and solo gaming, and really sort of where that distinction comes in is something that Mike is a huge proponent of and talks about quite a bit, both on the podcast and over on his channel, is that there are solitaire games that are designed for you to play by yourself, but there is also solo wargaming that you can do where you are playing a multiplayer game, either multi-handed or with the assistance of a bot or a control deck or some other form. Like there's a couple of different ways you could do it. But Mike, you've done this quite a bit on your channel where you've got a multiplayer game and you are playing it multi-handed. You're just playing all the different roles, right? That you're doing. I mean, you're having an identity crisis.
Well, it's, and I've said it in the past, I actually prefer to multi-hand games rather than play a strictly solitaire game. Because when I'm playing these games, I'm usually looking for some kind of narrative or some kind of historical reenactment almost, or maybe to try something different historically. So if I'm playing an opponent, an actual human opponent, they're not necessarily going to do what I want them to do as the enemy. I do like to double hand. Yeah. So I do like to double hand so I can kind of control the narrative of the game. And it's fun. I enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm the opposite as a solo gamer. I prefer like a true solitaire mode that's made for solo gamers, or like a to two hand something cooperative, maybe. I don't want to necessarily play four sides of a game. But Mike is a proponent of, I think, in a lot of ways, the original way of being a solo player. That's clearly something that, I, in my opinion, modern solo wargaming originated with wargamers doing just what Mike does.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people did it to learn games, you know, back in the day, to help them learn how to play the game. So they did play an opponent that they knew how to play the game. I think that was the main reason, maybe. And then people, I think there's a lot of people like me that just want to sit down and just use it as a historical reenactment tool, or just, you know, what ifs, those kinds of things.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what we were trying to capture in using multiple types of terms with this survey is, we don't care if it's a purpose-built solo game, solitaire game, or if you are playing a multiplayer game solo and just doing it all yourself. Like, either is fine with us. We were not concerned with it in either direction. But what we did care about was the fact that you are gaming on your own. And that's what we were mainly after. And the way we've done this is, we look, it's a basic Google form. There's nothing overly fancy about this. But what we do ask is that folks plug in BoardGameGeek URLs. It's not the best possible solution out there to get at the games, but it's the one that allows us to have the most consistent data. Because if you're using the URL for that, then we don't have to parse through which edition of RAF you meant, or if you just put in tank leader for one of the DVG solo games, we don't have to try and figure out which tank you're talking about. You know, if you just put in ASL, I don't have to try and figure out which of the myriad varieties of advanced squad leader you're picking and choosing. Maybe you only like the Pacific Theater. Maybe you only like the East Front. If you give us a specific URL to a specific game, then it's a lot easier for us to figure that out, and we don't have to guess what you meant. So that's what we do. We do a survey where we ask folks to plug in the URLs. You put in your five favorite, 1 through 5. What's your first favorite? What's your second favorite? So you've got to put in 5 URLs. And we've still got a couple of people that will put in 2 URLs, and then for the others, they'll, you know, put in some BS webs, because it does validate to make sure you're putting a URL in there. They'll put in some sort of BS website, so they really only have 2 of the 5 entries filled out. We discard those. You've got to have 5 completed entries for your entry in the survey to count, and we tell folks, like, you got to have 5 or we're going to discard this. We still get people that don't put 5 in there. We get people that complain about, well, what if I don't have 5 favorite? Well, maybe this survey isn't for you. And that's not trying to be mean, but maybe this isn't the survey for you if you don't have 5 favorites. If you don't know who all the NASCAR drivers are, you don't have 5 favorite NASCAR drivers. Maybe that NASCAR survey isn't for you.
Look, everything is for me, Brant. Okay.
The other thing that did change this year that I do want to call out, because this was something that came up in a discussion in last year's podcast with the three of us, and that is the issue of sci-fi and fantasy games. Because we did have some folks put like Space Empires 4X on last year's survey.
That was me.
And this year in the instructions, we specifically said that, look, a lot of us enjoy sci-fi and fantasy war games, but we're looking at historical options here. So if, you know, Burning Banners or Space Corp or one of those was your jam, like, cool, love it for you. Please play the hell out of it and have a great time. But it doesn't belong on this survey this year. And so that you're, you know, something like Burning Banners or Space Empires 4X, those guys have dropped off the survey this year. Those aren't something that figure in this year the way they did in previous years, because we didn't make that distinction. And Mike, I know you're mad at me for that.
Yeah, I was the one who put it on the list last year, I'm sure. And I really wanted to put it again this year, but I had to stop myself.
Yeah, so those are a couple of the things. And then the last one, just because we've seen too many people pick fights about this online, we very specifically did not try to draw a line on what is a war game, because it wasn't worth fighting over.
Yeah, nobody wants to try that.
And no, and the reason we do specify historical is because, like, we're interested in kind of seeing what periods of history. It's like a personal interest thing, but yeah, well, being restricted about what a war game is not really the deal.
No.
Yeah.
And so we put it in bold red text in the survey collection posts. We're not going to try to make that distinction for you. If it's a war game or a conflict simulation to you, then that's fine. Put it in here. We've had some internet twits in the past, you know, check this out, historical games. I can put train games on here. Okay, fine. Be a twerp. Like, you clearly are just trying to be an asshole at that point. Stop. Just stop. But if
yeah, this is sort of like the is a hot dog a sandwich argument, but like, if I ordered a hot dog and you brought me a sandwich, I would be mad at you and you would know exactly why I was mad.
Yes. Yes, because a hot dog is a taco. So, you know, if
only in North Carolina.
If Labyrinth is a war game to you, cool. If Twilight Struggle is a war game to you, cool. If Twilight Struggle is not a war game to you, cool, put five other games on there and that's fine. But we weren't going to try to make that distinction for people. We were going to let them do that for themselves.
Although anything by that David Thompson guy is not a war game, I'll tell you right now.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not David
Thompson. I'm just gonna flag that, hey, my first game found, a co-design with David Thompson, is going live in December for Queen of Spies, which is a solo game about running and spying.
Well, hold on. What happened to Night Witches?
We're waiting on it. We're just in art hell. I work on other projects. My life just continues to move.
I thought Night Witches was going to show up before Queen of Spies.
I did too, but it was not to be.
I so wanted to ask what happened to Night Witches. But you know what? I'm going to give Liz a break. I know there's things going on. I won't even ask. So, Brant, yeah. You ruined it.
I has a sad. So just as a quick reminder, before we get into all of this year's list, to revisit what we had from last year and the year before, because this is the third year we've done this, the 2024 results. So last year, our top five were D-Day at Omaha Beach, Skies Above Britain, RAF Battle of Britain 1940, which was the Decision Games re-release of the earlier RAF game from before, PAX Premier Second Edition, and Fields of Fire were your top five from 2024. And the RAF one is a good example of why we asked for URLs specifically, because we had people put in both the 2009 game, which was RAF Battle of Britain 1940, that's the full title, and the original RAF game from the 80s. If we had combined those two, because people just typed in RAF, then it would have come a lot closer to overtaking D-Day at Omaha Beach. But because we had people draw that distinction between them, the 2009 RAF one finished third in the list. So that was our 2004 list. Our 2003 list, hold on just a second. I had it on my screen and I just closed it. I apologize. I suck, people. Our 2003 list, so the original first time we did this, our top five were D-Day at Omaha Beach, PAX Premier Second Edition, Pavlov's House, Fields of Fire, and Skies Above Britain. So three of the five were still in the top five, were the same ones, including number one. D-Day at Omaha Beach was number one. Both of the first 2 years we did this. So that's what we had for 2024 and 2023. The results of those are linked at the bottom of this podcast. You can go take a look and take a look at some of the data diving we did there also. This year, for the 2025 Solo War and Historical Wargaming Survey, Liz, our top five is...
So in fifth place, we have Pavlov's House. In fourth, we have Comancheria, The Rise and Fall of the Comanche Empire. In third...
A quick note, sorry, because you didn't call it out. I was waiting to see. Fourth and fifth were actually tied on both the number of votes and the value of those votes. So they were exact ties on both fourth and fifth place.
Yes. So it's basically just alphabetical at that point. we got in third, RAF Battle of Britain, 1940. And then this is a shocker for me, down to number two, D-Day at Omaha Beach. It is surpassed this year by number one, Fields of Fire Deluxe Edition.
Yep. Well, Fields of Fire has dethroned the champ. And as a note... It wasn't close.
Well, no, wait a minute. Wait a minute. This is getting into data voodoo stuff here. But it's because of the waiting, right? Because I see that the game count was 34, which is one more than Fields of Fire.
D-Day at Omaha Beach did have more overall votes, but the average vote value was significantly lower.
Yeah.
So D-Day at Omaha Beach had 34 votes and 116 total points for a 3.41 average.
So Fields of Fire won the Electoral College, but D-Day won the popular vote.
Fields of Fire had 33 total votes in that top five. Yep. With a total value of 141 and a 4.27 average. So yeah. One more person had D-Day at Omaha Beach on their top five, but more votes further down the list, whereas Fields of Fire had more votes higher on the list.
Yes. Yeah. And I do want to note, I'm not saying it's trendy because Fields of Fire has been around forever. Obviously, it's been in this list forever. People love it. But the Deluxe Edition is a recent release.
Yes.
And so I think this game is riding on everybody being excited to have a more accessible, fresh version of something that everybody already thought was great.
Yeah,
I would agree with that. I definitely think that is a factor in all of this. I do agree with you. For those that are looking for a real world comparison to sort of how we weight our votes, it's a lot like the college football football, college basketball, top 25 polls that are run by the AP and the coaches and whatever else, right? You list your 25 and the number one team on your ballot gets 25 points towards their ranking. And then number two team gets 24 points and on down. Same thing with our top five, right? Your first place one gets 5 points, second place four, third place gets three, and work your way down from there. That's how we weight these. So Mike is right that one more person voted for D-Day at Omaha Beach than Fields of Fire. However, Fields of Fire obviously had more votes on the higher side because the average value of the votes was 4.27 to 3.41. And that's where we were. So again, Comancheria, Rise and Fall of Comanche, and Pavlov's House were a dead heat at 4 and 5. They are tied on the number of people that voted for them and the total value of their voting. So obviously the average will be the same as well. So those were a dead heat right there. And we don't have a lot of dead heats up and down our top 25. It's rare to see them, much less see one that high in the poll. So that was interesting. The full results of the entire poll were posted yesterday as you're listening to this, you know, assuming you're listening to this the day it came out. The full results are posted yesterday. We've got the top 25 down below on this episode of the podcast, so you can see there. As we look past the top five, just the top five down to like the top 10 or 15, Mike, is there one that jumps out at you as, holy cow, what's that one doing up there?
Not really.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of these that are repeat offenders in our top 25 from year to year. So I think, you know,
I guess one thing you I think you mentioned Pavlov's House was in the top five in 2023, but then dropped off in 24, but now it's back in the top five.
Yeah. And some of that could just be who was voting for it. Pavlov's House was, it moved around a bit. It dropped 8 points from 23 to 24 and then gained 6 places back again this year. So it did bounce a little bit.
That's interesting.
The other thing I think is actually interesting with that list, there's nothing in here that shocks me. I feel like these are pretty much like the usual suspects, but I thought it was very funny that Pavlov's House and Halls of Hegra are right next to each other on the list and that their scores are pretty close because, you know, you'd have to look at individual data to know this and I did not do that. But, you know, I'm wondering, is this like something where everybody has like a Siege game on their list and like some people are Pavlov's House people and some people are Halls of Hegra people, or are gamers putting both and they just like that kind of game? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's probably something we can do in one of the deep dive articles, and I'm happy to let you guys do it. Because y'all have access to the raw data also, so you guys can poke around with this as well. And for the audience, if folks would like to take a look at the raw data, there's some of it we don't mind providing to you. We don't mind providing you those top five votes across the data set and let you sort of manipulate and cut and paste and figure out like what went where and people that voted for this also voted for this other thing or didn't vote for something. We don't mind sharing some of that data with the general public. If somebody's interested, get in touch with us. I'm happy to see what other people come up with for the data crunching. Something I found interesting in the top 15 to 20 or so, Fire in the Lake at number 13 is our highest rated coin game. There's always a coin game up there somewhere. And this year, Fire in the Lake is the one that's way up there. There's always one somewhere. It's just a question of who. And this year it happened to be them. Back in 2023, Fire in the Lake was at number 18. And again, our highest rated coin game. I'd have to pull up the 2024 data again to see, but that's Fire in the Lake seems to be the one that people like. And I don't know if that's the topic. I don't know if that's because the bots play a certain way compared to the others. Fire in the Lake was number 10 in 2024 and also the highest rated coin game that year. So that's an interesting one that sort of jumps out a little bit there. Liz, anything besides the Pavlov's House Halls of Hegra duality there jump out at you?
I'm always interested in where the Ricky Royal modes will end up. So this year we got Paxmir and John Company right next to each other in spots 11 and 12. But I just sort of consider them a subset of this genre of gaming that's like interesting to track. And so I'm just always curious about other stuff. I'm pretty sure that those were higher last year.
So PAX Premier and John Company, in this case, yeah, they're both the second editions, which are the ones that include those bots, right?
Yes, correct.
Yeah. So PAX Premier second edition was number 4 last year, and John Company was number 9. PAX Premier actually dropped a little bit from 2023. John Company gained quite a bit from 2023, but they were both there. They were both in the top 10 there. Last year, whereas this year they're somewhere right around, what are they, 11 and 12? So they're pretty close to where they've been previous years.
Yeah. And, I mean, they're up there.
Yeah.
The thing that I'm always just looking for is, I guess I'm looking for Cult of the New, and unless you consider Fields of Fire Deluxe Edition to be in that category, which I really don't.
Yeah.
It's very interesting how it seems like there's a little bit of lead time on things getting onto this list, if that makes sense. Like there's not a lot of brand spanking new stuff on here, at least not up high.
Well, I think that the thing that we pointed out, it might have been in 23, was when Mr. President appeared and we were all like, this is a new thing, and maybe that's why it's up here so high. But now to still see it this high in 2025, that is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hanging in there.
In 2023, Mr. President was number 6. It was tied at number 6 with on the sum with Enemy Action Ardennes. Enemy Action Ardennes had a slightly higher average, so but they were both tied on points at number 6. In 2024, Mr. President actually it only dropped 1. It dropped from 6 to 7. Mm-hmm. So we weren't sure what was going to happen with it. It dropped a little bit this year, but not much. And so it does seem to have a little staying power. And I wonder if some of that isn't, hey, there's a second edition hitting. Some of that might be, hey, I can now play it with that app because it's in early access. Like there's a demo version of it that you can poke around with. So the fact that there is a digital adaptation of it may help keep it around a little bit. It may simply be, there just aren't a lot of
things like that. That's gotten my interest back. There's no way on God's earth I'm going to be setting that up regularly, even if it's an interesting game.
Yeah. No. That's definitely a good point. You're right, though, that the Cult of the New, there's not a lot of 2025 releases very high on this list. And even the Fields of Fire Deluxe Edition, while that the Deluxe Edition is a 2025 release, it's not like it's a new game.
Yeah.
The first legitimately new...
What? It's not new? Game, no, okay.
Yeah. The first legitimately new 2025 game is down in the 40s, and that's the JU87 Stuka Ace game from Lock and Load. From the designer's last name is Zancani. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that. There were only 3 votes for it, but it averaged a 4.67, which is pretty high. I mean, that's pretty solid. It's tied in the 40s there with Advanced Squad Leader. So, I mean, the couple of people that put it in there really love it. But that's our newest game other than that, the deluxe edition of Fields of Fire. That's our that's our highest rated 2025 release that's in the list here, which is it's interesting to see. I, Napoleon is still in the mid-teens. It's number 16 this year. It was, where was it in 2024? It was 21, so it's gone up. It went up from number 21. So that's interesting also. It jumped up 5 spots.
Yeah, there's an expansion coming out for that, and I wonder if that's got the interest reignited with it.
What do they expand? Are they bringing him back from St. Helena?
I think it adds new events, new cards, just kind of.
Okay, fair enough.
No, he doesn't go to America and take on. although maybe they will at some point.
That
it can't appear on this list though, because that's science fiction and fantasy.
Well, sure, we can go with that. Some other things that jumped out at me a little bit is there seem to be a couple of broad categories of the games that we see, especially the purpose-built solitaire games. Liz, you mentioned earlier the siege games, right? The tower defense kind of games like Halls of Hegra, Pavlov's House. There's certainly a good number of those on here. There is a decent number of the procedural sorts of games, the narrative, more storytelling, almost choose your own adventure style games, like B-17
Queen solo of classic.
Yes, there's a good number of those floating around out here. And then there's a decent number of those that are the multiplayer, but come with a specific solo or solitaire adaptations like the bots, like the Ricky Royal solo. Is it a bot? Is it a toolkit? Like, what's the best way you would describe those Ricky Royal
adaptations? It's a bot. So PAX Premier has a bot called Wakan that can, like, basically be inserted even into a multiplayer game to kind of spoil, okay. Or you could play against her alone. And then John Company is like a bot that kind of mimics
yeah.
the crown and like changes like its moods and priorities.
Yeah, because the coin games all come with bots out of the box now.
They do.
Yeah.
And they're better than ever because they're like cards.
Yeah. I do think they've gone back and retrofitted Andean Abyss and Cuba Libre with them at this point, also with later editions, because those two didn't ship with them out of the box the way the later ones did. There's
a variety. I suspect that system is also what's got Vijaya Nagara so far up. Because it's got one of those nice little card-based.
Yep, it's got the bots there. So those are three things that you see pretty consistently, and it's not necessarily that they cluster together, but those are three broad categories of the games you see. You see the tower defense siege-style games where you're fending off attacks from all sides. You will see the very narrative, story-driven, procedural-style games, and you will see games that are multiplayer games but come specifically with a bot to adapt to solitaire play. That doesn't mean those...
Although, what am I talking about? The Vijaya Nagara. They've got a good... It's like a spreadsheet, but it's just much nicer than any of the other ones that are around. What am I thinking? I am... What am I on tonight? But, yes... I will just point out that was my mistake.
Well, and that one's been around a little bit also, where it was on the list last year. So last year was the year it was released. It was number 13 last year. And this year, where was it? I'm having to scroll up and down here a little
bit.
It's
at 23.
So 23. Okay. So it's still in our top 25, but it is moving up and down. But the coin games are consistently showing up on here. A lot of the DVG Leader series, right? The Stuka Leader, Corsair Leader, Apache Thunderbolt Leader. Like, you're consistently seeing a lot of those DVG solo games, the especially the aerial ones, will show up on here. And the Field Commander series, or in the case of Nimitz, Fleet Commander, you're seeing a bunch of those show up on here. So those are kind of normal. Like, there are definitely some series games in here. David Thompson's Valiant Defense series is all over the place on these lists. So that's something that seems to be fairly normal that folks are kind of used to these days. Liz, you are far more familiar with the People's Top 200, the People's Choice list, but something that you've brought up in the past is that there are a couple of games that show up on our survey that consistently show up on theirs also, and I think Navajo Wars was one of them, wasn't it? Or was it the Comanche
Radio? I don't remember where it was last year, but it has consistently showed up. I think it's been a long time since it was very high.
Yeah.
So, Spirit Island is the new king, followed by Mage Knight over on the People's Choice main thing, and I'm a huge fan of Mage Knight. I totally get it, but like, there are no war. I'm just scrolling through it. So the first thing I would consider a war game personally, and I mean, I guess if you want to count Hadrian's Wall, but I really don't.
So you're probably
I'm at 25. Still looking.
Yeah,
but that it breaks my heart a little bit, you know.
Yes.
Oh, Navajo. Okay, so hang on. Nemo's War is at 35. That's like the first kind of wargamey game on here, followed closely by 36, Dawn of the Zeds, and this is last year's list.
Yeah.
Followed by PAX Premier. So basically, there's like a little cluster of what I would consider like our kind of thing in there, but it takes a while to get to it.
Yeah. And Navajo Wars is in our top 10. Comancheria is in our top 5. So like 20% of our top 10 here are, you know, the great Western frontier of U.S. history that are out there, which, you know, given the primacy of World War II, American Civil War, and Napoleon across the broad swath of wargaming, seems a little unusual that 20% of your top 10 of solo games would be, you know, Indian Wars in the American West.
Say is that those are considered to be good, heavy solo systems. And I think that people who consider themselves, like, when you talk about a canon, right? I think that people who take themselves very seriously as solo wargamers are going to see those games on the list and want to try them at some point.
Okay, you guys spent most of a podcast yelling at me for using the term canon.
Well, you know, it's here, so we're just going to use what we have. We could go with a different word another time, but I'm just connecting our continuing conversation about this matter. But no, I think that, you know, when you're looking for guidance from other solo gamers about what is good, how about that? Those games come up a lot. And so I think that, you know, it's sort of, and our list is contributing to that, right? And that's not a bad thing, because they're really good games. But I also think that if you are feeling sort of ambitious and you want to bite off a chunky game that's like considered a little tougher, you might pick one of these. They're heavy and that's not a bad thing at all. But like it makes perfect sense to me that these show up because they kind of get passed on by word of mouth over the years.
Yeah, I think you're right. I was going to say, I don't necessarily think it's the theme here. It's you know, the system more than the theme. If you've got a really, really good, I'm not a big fan of, you know, Cold War Goes Hot. Brant knows that. But if a solitaire game came out that just received a lot of attention, everybody's talking about how great the system is, it's really fun to play, I'm going to try it, you know, because it's like Liz says, you're looking for that the system that really makes you say, wow, this is a great solitaire only game.
Yes. Yes. I will note too that, like, you know, most of these are my kind of solo game and not Mike's kind of solo game.
Well, I thought I saw Mrs. Thatcher's world on there. Yeah, there it is. 27.
That one game down at 27.
Fair enough. So one thing,
but yeah, solo gamers are looking for that good solo fix specifically, and I could be really wrong about this, and I'm sure there'll be people who tell me I'm wrong because it's the internet. But I think that solo gamers will pick games more because they're considered to be good solo experiences, whether or not they're interested in the subject matter. At least I'm that way.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second, actually, about why people pick some of the ones that they do. Because I do think there's a little bit of interesting feedback we got with some of the optional questions that we asked the audience. One thing that I do want to note is, in terms of number of participants, it was down a bit this year. The last 2 years, we were in the mid-200s. We were around 260, 250, high 240s the first 2 years. This year, we did drop below 200, and we had to throw out about a half a dozen that had some bullshit entries on them. And so we had to boot a couple of those. So we're in the 190s for the total number of participants this year. And it's interesting because despite all of the different places that we promoted this and hyped this and said, hey, people, come check this out, we're still going to find somebody go, I never even knew this was happening. And probably at least five of those people are the same ones that the year before said, I never knew this was happening. We said we'd do it at the end of the summer every year. And the end of the summer rolled around and they're going to say, I never knew this was happening, despite us carpet bombing the internet with, hey, come participate. So I'm sure we're going to have some of that. This year we had, I think it was 12 total games get double digit numbers of votes. So out of, you know, 400 and something total games across 190 odd entries, you know, there's 12 of them that at least 10 people liked. But it's interesting because after D-Day at Omaha Beach and Fields of Fire Deluxe, they both got vote counts in the 30s. After that, it drops down to the high teens with Comancheria, Pavlov's House, Skies Above Britain, RAF Battle of Britain, and Halls of Hegra all up in that 16-17 count. And then it falls off again down to 13, 12, and 10. So the ones that folks are gaga for, D-Day at Omaha Beach and Fields of Fire, get a ton of votes across a bunch of people. After that, it does fall off quite precipitously this year. And I think that is different than what we had last year and the year before, where the decline was a little more gradual in terms of the total number of votes across the different games, for whatever that's worth.
Although my favorite thing to do on this list is I like to look at the things that got mentioned like once or twice, because so many people have like such weird favorites. It's not weird, like, but they're individual favorites. Like, I dig in here because there's always something super interesting to be found that I would just have never thought of.
Yeah, and there's a lot of cool stuff that got one vote, but it was in first place for somebody. So the you know, it's got a 5 on its score, the average is a 5, but the problem is once you get down below like 8 votes across the 8 total votes across the board there, it's tough to draw too many conclusions, because just at that point, like, 2 votes can really skew that game's one individual ranking, where if we had a broader pool of folks voting, yeah, is the possibility we could end up with a lot more single vote games, but we're probably going to start adding multiples of votes further up for some of the more popular ones and kind of normalize that data a little bit more, right? The broader the participation, the more normal you could expect your data set to be. And that's, I mean, that's just stats. Like, that's not me making stuff up. So what did you see down in those single vote games that caught your eye this year?
This reminded me that I have a copy of Rome Inc. and need to freaking play it.
Isn't there a Rome Inc. 2 out now?
Yeah, and I need to play that too. Damn it. I was also, I didn't think the Grass Crown Amabel's game was a solo game. Somebody must be playing both sides. I'm kind of interested in that. Just, you know,
I have that. Looking for... I don't think that is a solitaire only game. I think that's a two-player game.
But hey, somebody's playing it solo, it counts. I'm super happy to see Legion of Otter down here, even if it's at like $2.89, just because like that game slaps. It's fun.
Yeah. I was interested, so I just sorted our list by average and descending by average. So all of those one vote, 5 point games would kind of bubble up to the top. Interestingly, we have four games that got two votes each, but both votes were in first place.
Yeah. So I'm really glad that you said that you did that, because I was wondering what had happened to my brain as I was looking at this list that had just got out of order. So.
All right, so we're all looking at the same Google Sheets document, and I just keep screwing with folks by resorting it along different categories. So the four games that all have the same, so they all have some value of 10 because they each got two first place votes. Hadrian's Wall, Tarawa 1943, Where There Is Discord, War in the South Atlantic, and Combat Volume 2. So the expansion for Combat all came in there. And that's a little interesting. So I was curious, and now it makes me curious to like pull up last year's stats and the year before stats and go see if something similar happened those years. So Mike, say something smart while I go look up the other files quick.
Something smart.
I know.
The expectations are getting too high here.
I should have called on Liz. I'm sorry.
No, not me either. No. It's bedtime. Not really.
Yeah. Mike, what's something that's one of those single vote games that jumped out at you and you went, oh, wow, hey, that's kind of cool.
I'm still looking.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah, and then
last year you got mad at me for not giving you the access to the file early enough.
That's true. You gave me an extra 2 days this year, so I should have had a little more time.
Yeah. While he's looking, I'll distract and say that like what I want to look at after this is I want to look at the rookie and vets list, because I love that you pulled those out in different tabs, and I think that's really fun.
Okay, just a second. We will go look at that. So in 2024, we actually had six games that each got two first place votes, and none of them are the same. as this year, Dutch Resistance, Orange Shall Overcome, El Rey Planeta, Men of Iron Battles Tri-Pack, Sharp Practice, which is a minis game, which is a minis rule set, Dark Valley, and World at War 85 Storming the Gap. So there were six of them that year. And just a second, I was about to pull up the 2023 list and go take a look over there and just see. Because that is interesting that we would have some that got multiple votes and only in first place. That's interesting and odd that the only people that love it really love it, and then other folks just don't even have it on their list at all. That's kind of weird to me. To me at least. Nope, that's not gonna work.
Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective. Oops.
It's one of those historical ones.
Hey, look, that actually won a Charlie, I think, when you're so.
The very first year we did this, so back in 2023, we only had one of those games that got two first place votes and nothing else. And that was Stalingrad 42, Southern Russia, June to December 1942. So it's a recent phenomenon in that we didn't see it the first year, but we've seen it since then.
All right, I can stop looking because I found the one that popped out and that was it.
Okay. Liz, you had some particular data breakdowns that you wanted to go look at where you packed the data a little bit.
So one of my favorite little questions that you ask, in addition to just what games are you playing that you like, are, you know, how long have you been wargaming? And so, you know, I think most of the responses this year were very heavily in the I've been doing this longer than you've been alive range.
there are a lot of those. So real quick, the breakdown on that. We have 5 people that were 0 to 1 years, 19 people that were 1 to 3, 40 respondents in the 3 to 10 range, 29 in the 10 to 25 range, 34 of them were in the 25 to 40 range, and 65 for more than 40 years.
Right. So this is skewing. So this is skewing very heavily to people who have been gaming longer than I've been alive, technically, for now. I really think that that's cool. I also think that it's why you don't get a whole lot of new hotness on this list.
So are you looking at the veterans list? Is that the one you're looking at?
Yeah. So like there's two lists that Brant has made that I'm sure will make it into the data somewhere. So there's one tab that is rookies. and there's one tab that is vets. And I think it's very interesting that Fields of Fire is high among both, but much higher among the rookies and the vets. That is extremely interesting to me. But the lists other than that are like kind of different. The vets list is, there's some crossover, but the vets are more likely to pick things like ambush or enemy action or den, which are like classics in my opinion. Whereas number two on the rookie list is Halls of Hegra. And then like Pax Pamir is high on their skies. So Britain is high on there. And so I just find that extremely interesting. There's like a slightly different spread between people who've been playing for less time and the people who've been playing for more.
Yeah. So the folks in the vets category, that's the folks that have been gaming for 40 years or more. So that top five, D-Day to Omaha Beach, Fields of Fire Deluxe, RAF Battle of Britain 1940, Enemy Action Ardennes, and Raid on Saint Nazaire. So that's that top five for that age bracket. Not age, I mean, it is an age bracket because there's no way you've been playing for more than 40 years unless you're in well into your 40s, if not into your 50s. Whereas that rookies list, so those are, that's a combined batch of both the 0 to 1 and 1 to 3 year groups. So these are basically, this is going to sound crazy, but these are people that started wargaming since the pandemic.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
But that's 5 years in the rearview mirror at this point, guys.
I'm not saying that COVID was good, but I am saying that maybe a lot of people stayed home and started solo wargaming during that era.
Started playing some games. So the top five for the rookies category, Fields of Fire Deluxe, Halls of Hegra, Comancheria, Pax Pamir, Second Edition, and Skies Above Britain. So again, it's ones that we see in the top 25, right? Because you're not going to you're not gonna end up on a top five of like a good chunk of the, especially the group that's been wargaming more than 40 years, right? It's 65 of 190 some, so it's like a third of our response group.
Yeah.
So it's going to be impossible to get in the top five of just that list and not be somewhere in the top 20 on the overall list.
But I want to note there's one really different. Big difference, and I might be reading too much into it because it's stats, like you can't. So there's only one vote, from what I can see, for votes for women on the vets list, but among the rookies, still like three, but that's at rank 12 among rookies. Yeah. It's at like 172 among vets. And yeah. I wish more people had participated, just because I am so curious about what newer wargamers perceive to be wargames, because like that's an argument our community is constantly having. But I do think that one of the reasons we have the argument all the time is that it's generational, or at least not generational in terms of age, but in terms of like entry into the hobby.
Veterancy.
Mm-hmm.
So a similar comparison set, and we'll jump over to the other tabs that I had built that, again, you know, these are going to be shared in subsequent articles where folks can go look. I also, one of the other optional questions we asked is how much of your total board gaming is war or historical gaming? Because we'll have folks that, like, it's War Games Uberalis and that's all I want to play, where we also have some folks that are playing a ton of other kinds of games. In part, that just might be who their audience is. Maybe they're, you know, gaming more with their kids, playing more Kids of Carcassonne until they're old enough to teach them Pavlov's House or something else. But we did ask how much of your total board gaming is war or historical gaming. And the 0 to 25%, so the low quartile is 36 folks in that bucket. 25 to 50, there's 39. So all told, about a third, a little more than a third of our respondents, less than half of their total board gaming is war or historical gaming. The 50 to 75 category is 46. The 75 on up is 59. And then we had 16 people. The answer was all of it. Like, the only board gaming they play is war and historical gaming. Now, we didn't ask what percentage that we did ask elsewhere, but we didn't ask, this isn't telling us how much of that is solo, but just how much of your board gaming is war and historical gaming. And so what we looked at was what's the ranking for those that are 75% war and historical gaming and more, and what are the folks at 25% and under, where are they? And so, you know, again, Fields of Fire, D-Day to Omaha Beach, RAF Battle of Britain, Combat Volume 1, and Skies Above Britain are your top five. Enemy Action Ardennes, Empire of the Sun, Pavlov's House, Stalingrad, Advance of the Volga. That's your list for the people that are high percentage of wargaming. Your low percentage of wargaming, this is where you start to see some difference, right? Navajo Wars, Pax Pamir Second Edition, Pavlov's House, Halls of Hegra, Fields of Fire Deluxe Edition. Again, Fields of Fire shows up on high on every one.
It sure does, and so does RAF Battle of Britain.
Yeah.
And D-Day at Omaha Beach is 8. So, like, even these people who are saying that that's a very wargaming list for people who aren't wargaming that much.
Yes.
Allegedly.
Yeah. Well, but what it means is that when they are wargaming, that they're going into the canon.
They're going hard.
Interestingly, further down on that list is where you see Hero of Weehawken, the Aaron Burr conspiracy. You know, Mr. President starts to show up on both lists, but Votes for Women, two of the votes for women are on this, are on the low list, folks that aren't heavy war gamers, you know, high percentage of war gamers. And I'm not sure it's on the other list at all. I'm going to scroll down and go look, but I don't see it.
Although I got to say, like,
oh,
what is a low versus a high percentage war gamer if they're playing Fields of Fire, but...
Yeah. Well, you know, and again, that may because, be like, somebody that...
How much game time do you have if only 20% of the time you spend playing games is that game? Because that's a big boy.
Well, but again, that may go back to that's the one that they can do to get their wargaming fixed. But in the meantime, they're like, you know, playing Ticket to Ride with the kids or something, you know?
Oh, yeah. And obviously, I'm just teasing.
Yeah. And so it's not that they wouldn't want to do more. That just may be all that they've right. got the time or audience to game with. Mike, what do you think? Anything jump out in those different comparison groups?
No, it's just that I'm seeing some things that really shouldn't be in here. We talked about some more games that are questionable in the low list.
Oh, boy.
Let me go back to the high and see if it's like that. Probably. So, the problems, like you said, though, Brent, you get once you go down past, especially when you're this thin with the data, once you go down past the first 10 or so, it kind of just falls into data bits. It doesn't really have a whole lot of meaning.
Yeah, and that's why when we start talking about sort of where things rank within the list, you get to a certain point where it's single votes, right? That all those games that got one vote in second place. There's a whole bunch of them. They got one vote. They got 4 points. There's like 18 of them. They kind of sort alphabetically at that point. Man, if you're in 218th versus 222nd, you're probably all really in the same place, just tied. It's just that that's how the list sorted itself. Once you get down to those one vote in second place, they've all got 4 points. They all share. So that's one of the reasons why we really only talk about like the top 25 or 30, because after that, like one vote can pull things so far in a different direction. And which one should be higher on the list? The game that got 5 fifth place votes for a total of 5 points, or a game that got 1 first place vote for a total of 5 points? Like 5 other people liked this one that just wasn't their favorite, versus all of those games that only one person voted for, but it's their favorite one. So, you know, it's tough to draw many conclusions once you get below like 6 or 7 votes on something. It's really tough to draw those
conclusions. Yeah, yeah. And I also see that not one single person is playing Case Blue Solitaire.
That's because that person is still trying to set up Case Blue Solitaire.
The person that won that from Gary is still trying to set that up, yeah.
They're probably still clipping it, man.
Season 15 of Mentioned in Dispatches is graciously supported by all of our Patreon members, but especially our regimental patrons who supported us at the top level. The Armchair Dragoons would like to thank Miles R., James M., Kevin Bertram, Catastrophe Games, Fred and his dog, Joseph Knorr, Patrick Geraghty, Michael Sunborg, Stagger Wing, and Paul LaFontaine. Wargaming is our jam, and they help us spread it. You too can support the Regiment of Strategy Gaming as a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/armchairdragoons.
One other group that I did sort out was there is a group that is all of the games that got 5 or more votes. And look, it's the top half of the list, right? I mean, but the point at which you've got 5 or more votes out of 190 something, like at that point, we've got enough votes and enough points to differentiate to really kind of draw some distinctions. At the bottom of that list, we had 2 games that both have 11 total points as their value. B-17 Flying Fortress Leader got 7 votes and a sum value of 11, whereas World at War 85 Storming the Gap got 5 votes and a sum value of 11. So slightly higher average value on the vote, but not quite as many people voting for it. Those two are at the bottom of the list, and they're down in the mid-40s. But that's how far we can go with a minimum of 5 votes, is we can get down to the 40s. And that's beyond that, man, it's just so much noise in the signal that it's tough to really draw any conclusions beyond the mid-40s. As folks are looking through the overall list and trying to parse some information. And if you're looking down at, how is this 108? That should be at least 102nd. Like, man, it's sorted alphabetically at that point. Get over it. So, all right, a couple of other pieces of data that we were able to pull out. So again, we're querying the BGG database. So the data is as good as we can pull out from BGG with the URLs that we're having people enter. The titles of the games, look, man, we're going to get the titles of the games right. The designers are more right than wrong. The publishers are more right than wrong, although in a couple of cases, we've got some localizations that, you know, make things a little weird. The years released are just kind of crap. Like, there's just so, because BGG doesn't always have the right year based on the original edition being released versus a re-release. And so we're just kind of ignoring the year released data that we pulled back. But for the designers, you know, Mike, if going into this, I know you can already look at the designers, the usual suspects that you would expect to be fairly high on the solo list for how many games those designers are going to have on here. Who are your top three or four that you're expecting to see?
It's interesting because I did do a separate data dive into just this topic, but the names I expect to see are the ones I'm seeing on here. And for me, of course, it's going to be Ben Madison and Wes Ernie.
I'll be looking for Butterfield.
Yeah.
And Butterfield. And the one that also surprised me, but it shouldn't have, was Dan Versa.
Yeah.
Right. He's got a lot in here too.
The three that I'd be thinking of off the top of my head are Butterfield, Verson, and Gregory M. Smith, just because those guys turn out a ton of solo games. Like, that's their shtick and they do a lot of them. Ben Madison has a bunch of solo games, but Ben Madison's got a bunch of non-solo games also that he's done. So it's not a surprise to see him up there also. Beyond that though, Mark Herman is.
Mark Herman surprised me, actually, and he shouldn't, but to see his name in there, it's a statement of just how great of a designer he is, but that kind of stood out that he was in there among these other names that we're discussing, right? I mean,
So Butterfield's got 11 titles on here. Mark Herman and Dan Versen and Ben Madison are all tied with 9. Richard Berg's got 8. And then your next batch, Gregory M. Smith, Richard Clark, Dave Kershaw, Herman Luttman all have 7. And then you've got Volko, Jim Dunnigan, and Mike Lambeau, the king of the solo wargame book, all have 6 titles on this list.
Okay. Well, so here I'm gonna take issue with the data collection, and I'm gonna claim that Ben Madison is number one. Maybe number two, but he's definitely number one. And I say that because you've listed 9 Ben Madison games, but your data set actually shows 3 of his games as Wes Ernie as the designer, but that's not true. He's co-designer. So really, there's 3 more games that should be with Ben Madison up there.
Yeah, and I need to go back and double-check that data because, like, I got to go back and look at how Fire in the Lake is credited, right? It's credited as Mark Herman when it's Mark and Volko.
Yeah.
So are some of these where it's a little off based on what came back out of the BGG data.
Yeah. So to me, though, there's 2 names here that are designers that like design games that Liz likes. Solitaire only games. It's Ben Madison and it's Dan Versen. Because if you look at John Butterfield, there's a lot of solo games in there, but a lot of his games are not strictly solitaire. It's solitaire or 2 player.
So if you look at Dan Versen, David Thompson, even though you don't think anything of his is a war game.
Hey, David Thompson's up and coming, damn it.
I will say this.
He won like a lifetime award at SD HisCon last year, and he was so uncomfortable because he was like, but I'm not old.
I'm 12.
That's hilarious, actually.
The interesting thing about David Thompson, so at this point, David Thompson's churned out like 42 games, but I really think
that like last year,
all of David Thompson's first like 9 releases are on here somewhere, right? I mean, it's so, you know, the ratio of games released to games, you know, to games appearing on this list has got to be pretty high for David Thompson, I would think. So Pavlov's House, Lansworth Ridge, Soldiers in Postman's Uniforms, and Castle Inner, all 4 of David Thompson's Valiant Defense series are on here.
I was actually very pleased to see War Stories show up. It showed up low, but it's there. For those of you who enjoy sort of the narrative war game, I actually think that War Story might be the best implementation of something like that that I have yet seen.
Was that a
because
computer
it's
game?
A neat intersection of narrative and game.
Was that a computer game?
No. It is like it's from Osprey, and it's like a game where you play through missions, and it's part choose your own adventure, but there's also enough gaminess in it in terms of your skills and skill checks and how you can manipulate those. And you make some choices, like occasionally you'll get a map and you'll have to place where you are. and like proceed through the story with combat. And so it's a really interesting mix because it's not totally on rails, but it is a story game.
So Dark City Games makes games like that that are they're like, you know, what do you call it? Choose your own adventure, but beyond, like you're saying, because they have maps, counters, you have stats, you have combat.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of cool.
A lot of the stuff that the Dark City guys do, and I didn't even look to see if there were any of the Dark City ones further down on the list in here, are very reminiscent of the old Fantasy Trip solo modules. And that was their core shtick back in 2005, 6, 7, when they were first starting that company, because they've been around for 20 years now. When they were first putting the company together, that was one of the key things that they were after. Is at the time, the Fantasy Trip type games could only be had on the secondary market, and that was something that they had a lot of fun gaming with as kids and wanted to bring those back. And so they made it a point to that was the style game they were going after, and that's exactly what you're describing, Mike. There's some combat that happens as a part of this, but it's a lot of narrative paragraphs of kind of jumping around, and that's how you play the games. That's what you do. I do find it interesting that you will have some folks that do a bit of shit talking, for lack of a better term, about the narrative style games that, you know, talk about it almost kind of feeling on rails, and you're kind of a dice chucker for the AI, if you will, but those procedural narrative driven games. And yet they're also ones that kind of, you know, they love Ambush. It's just one of those ones that I find kind of interesting that, hey, wait a minute, maybe these are very similar.
I think it's very interesting how Ambush's staying power is so strong. Not because it's a bad game, because it's not, but because it's a game that I feel like you can really only play it once and it's really hard to get. And so
the base Ambush game itself is not that hard to get. If you're trying to find Purple Heart or the tank expansion, or God forbid, you're looking for Battle Hymn, the Marines in the Pacific version, you're going to spend money on those.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Those you're definitely going to spend money on.
But I think you're right, Liz, because I have battled him, but I haven't played it yet, because that's my fear, is I'm only going to play it one time. What's the point of playing it more than once, right?
Right, so you got to wait for, like, when you're really going to get the most, like, when you're in the real mood to do it. Like, it's got to be the richest time. Like, the thing that's interesting is, so I feel like people are either, with Ambush, they're voting on memory. Like, they had such a fantastic time when they played it that it's just, like, nothing can beat the memory of having played it. Or they're betting on future joy, which is probably less likely. But it's very interesting to see it continue to do well, because, like, just the memory of playing Ambush is so strong that it, like, pushes out other games, because you're probably not playing it a second or a third time. Or maybe you play it and then you wait, like, 30 years and then you play it again.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also one of those games I wanted to do a playthrough on the channel, but I don't want to ruin it for people, right?
Right. I've actually had the same issue of, like, you know, this is cool. It'd be so cool to cover it, but, like, I don't want to mess up other people's chance to play it.
I am curious. I'm just going in and taking a look. This is, you know, we're doing this live on the air, folks, but something that I didn't crunch the numbers on before, but I am kind of curious to see how many total lines we've got of one fifth place vote. How many games do we have? They got one vote in fifth place. We've got 74 different games that all got a single fifth place vote, which is interesting. That's a lot of games that are down at the fringe end. Similarly, I am curious for all the ones that got one first place vote and only one first place vote. Because we know we have a handful that got two first place votes. but now I'm curious about the one first place vote. How many of these do we have? Where'd we go? We've got 34 of those. So we've got a whole lot more that got a single fifth place vote than got a single first place vote. I guess if you're, you know, if it's something that you love enough that it's getting a first place vote, the odds are pretty good there's other people out there that loved it at least a bit, right?
Yeah.
So I was just curious to see where those broke down. And again, look, folks, you can sort the data in our sortable columns that we've got in the article, like, as much as you want. So you can sort of see some of these things yourself as you're crunching around and playing with the data.
Who's go?
as we start to wrap up our episode of the podcast here, taking a look at some things, a couple of other things in the optional questions that we asked. One of the things was, why do you choose the games that you do to play solo or solitaire? And 63 of the respondents said it was the conflict or theater or battle. So it's the subject of the game is what matters most to them. And that was 63 of the respondents. That was our highest result. The next two are only one vote apart. Game system. And then what was the other one? Hold on just a second. Sorry. I got to go back and double check because my graph cut off the answer. Doggone it. Yeah, my graph needed.
Yeah, I was looking, it just says the games.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to look. I'm sorry. The game's narrative.
While he's looking, I'll point out that there's only two for publisher. That's interesting.
Yeah. So people don't care what the publisher is. It's interesting that artwork and graphics and then like completeness, like completing the set, those only got one vote each. So conflict theater or battle, the game system, and the game's narrative were the three highest reasons that people sought out the games that they did. The other thing that was interesting is what's the most important information that people seek out before they make a purchase or an acquisition? And a video playthrough was the highest one there with 55 total. The next highest was a written or text review of the game, and then video review of the game, and then online discussions. Everything after that was down in the low double digits or single digits for the responses. But a video playthrough or after action report. So seeing the game in action was the most important piece of information that people sought out before making a purchase or acquisition amongst the respondents that we had for this, followed by a written or text review as opposed to a video review, which I found interesting. So show me the game in action, or if you're going to evaluate it, I would rather read a text review of that than I would rather watch a video review of it. And that's a pretty big gap between video review versus written review. Again, a little bit of interesting data in there as you're crunching. And then as always, because, you know, we got to ask, where did you find out about this survey? Board Game Geek runs away with this every year. 79 of our respondents found out about it on Board Game Geek. After that, it was the Dragoons, a Discord community shared on Blue Sky, and then shared in a wargaming group on social somewhere. But Board Game Geek like obliterates this category every year. It's more than the next three combined. So if you want to reach folks, Board Game Geek is still the place to do it.
Thanks, BGG.
Well, but there's also the consideration of the folks that are responding because we ask them to put in BGG URLs. There may be people that see that we are asking for URLs from Board Game Geek, and so they just dump out of it altogether. Like, never mind, I'm not even going to bother responding to it. So in a case like that, people that are already averse to Board Game Geek may not be responding to the survey at all because we're asking for data from Board Game Geek as a part of it.
Yeah, that's tough. But I mean, I'm sorry, Board Game Geek is just the best info we have.
Yeah, that doesn't mean it's great info.
it's just the best we can do.
It's the best of the options, which still not great, but you know, it allows us to have consistent data, and that's the primary reason we use it.
I think people don't actually understand the degree to which weird entries go in, even with asking for something as specific as BGG URLs. And you know, like talking to Kevin Erskine about previous years of doing the People's Choice Top 200, he used to have people send him a geek mail with their top 20 games, and the number of entries that would be indecipherable is stunning. And he was like doing it by hand. Like, this man is a hero, and I'm really glad that they've changed a lot of the system now. But you know, for years and years, this is how that was. And you know, just trying to eliminate confusion between editions, and like, you can't just put John Company, because which one do you mean? You can't. You know, like, it's just anything to reduce mistakes is so valuable. And I think that people trust others too much and don't realize just how messed up our results would be, I think, if we left it just open text.
Yeah. And one of the, so two quick things. One of the places where we saw that last year with the difference between the number of entries for RAF Battle of Britain 1940 versus the original edition of RAF. And had you combined the two, they were only like 1 or 2 points off the top with D-Day at Omaha Beach last year. But the reason that we absolutely were not going to combine the two is the newer edition, the Battle of Britain, the the one with the Battle of Britain 1940 subtitle allows you to play both RAF and the Germans, and there's even the option for an opposed campaign in there, which doesn't exist in the original. So we're operating from the presumption that you as the respondent are intentionally putting in the one you mean and not just the first thing that pops up, the, you know, on the return within BGG, and that you chose the original versus the new edition for a very specific reason. So if you put in the original John Company versus John Company second edition, we assumed that you did that intentionally, not just that, oh, I just grabbed the first thing that popped up. So
yeah,
maybe that's the wrong assumption on our part, but like, you gave us the responses, so we can't assume ill intent there. All right, something we ask every year, and then we forget about it until I try to go back and listen to this podcast in, you know, early July of next year to get ready for this in 2026. What should we have done differently, Mike? What did we learn this year that we should do differently going into next year? What did we not ask that you wish we had asked? What did we not crunch that you wish we had crunched? What did we not see that you wish we had seen?
Okay. So like every year though, right, we always end this way where we think of all these great ideas that we never move forward with.
I know.
So what would be interesting to me would be to see the categories these things fall into. Are they CDGs? Are they tower defense type games? Are they just basic hex encounter games? I would love to see. Are they monster games? Are there monster games in here? I made fun of Case Blue earlier, but are there monster games in here? Do people play those solo? Those are the kinds of things I would like to see.
I just want to get more participants. I want to promise myself that I'm going to be more aggressive about annoying people to do this survey next year, because I just really enjoy seeing the results and I want more results.
Yeah.
I think people are a little tired of everything this year.
That may be part of it. And part of it may be that people are, oh, these fuckers again, like they're just sick of dealing with us. That's entirely probable. I'm not going to rule it out. But also, one of the other pieces there, we could promote it to a wider audience. The concern, of course, is that if we promote it to a wider audience, we get too far afield from those where wargaming is sort of the core thing. And I'm not saying that we want to get rid of the folks that have only been wargaming for up to 3 years, or the folks for whom 25% or less of their board gaming diet is wargaming. We definitely want those people inside the tent, at least as respondents for this. But we don't want to turn it into a carbon copy of that People's Choice 200, right? I mean, then we're doing the same thing Kevin's already doing. So, you know, it's a fine line to walk. Like, how do we go get more people? And get the right people sounds exclusionary, but get the right people.
To get people who really care about this project specifically.
Yes, yes. That's a good way to put it. People who understand the assignment, I think was the term you used 1 year. Those are the people we need to get. I agree with you. I think we need to find a way to get to those folks. Mike, I think you've got a good idea in sort of what are the broader categories where these fall. I'm curious how you intend to categorize them as such, though. Is that something that we can pull from the existing BGG data, or is that something that you're going to go through and sort of hand code and say, oh, that one's a CDG. Oh, I consider that a monster game. Oh, that one's a procedural narrative game. Like, how do you think we apply that data?
Well, that's the problem. And I think Liz just gave a good example of someone doing that, where you have to actually go through and hand pick through these things. I don't think Board Game Geek categorizes games like that. I think they would have a war on their hands if they even tried, I think.
Well, no, I mean, there are tags that you can put on the games. And so we can try and pull some of those back from the data. If only we had somebody who was retired and therefore had all kinds of time on their hands to go through these things.
Oh, snap.
Yeah. Liz, when do you retire?
We'll have to see who we can find.
When do I what?
When do you retire? That's when you
probably never. Now that I'm a full-time game designer, I basically all I do is work. I took a vacation and like had bad internet for the last week, and I did not even realize how fried I was getting until I did it.
You need vacations. And that's another thing. When you have vacations, don't try to dial in on podcasts. Just focus on the vacation.
Well, normally it would have been fine. It's just that I didn't realize that we picked a place that had no internet.
There's no normally calling in when you're on vacation that's fine.
Look, I'm bad at vacation.
Yeah. So, you know, I do think that the folks that replied understood the kind of thing we were looking for. And I think we largely got some solid answers. In some cases, sort of confirming what the usual suspects were. In some cases, we're seeing some new things bump up or some slightly older things bump down as the new hotness fades slightly. I do think Fields of Fire jumping to the top had a lot to do with that new deluxe edition that came out. I definitely think that that had something to do with it. But I do think that there's better info to be gathered if we can widen the lens on the number of participants. I am curious about how many non-US participants we're getting. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously there's a language barrier built in, right? You've got to be able to understand English to fill out the survey because we only publish it in English.
I'm going to guess that this is a very American audience.
I'm guessing you're probably correct. But I would like to do better than that. I would like to get a broader participation from non-US respondents. And I would like to get some just broader participation overall amongst the Wargamers. Look, man, there's 15,000 in the primary Wargaming group on Facebook, and we've got 190-something responding to the survey. I get that of that 15,000, they ain't a lot of, you know, not everybody's playing solo or solitaire or war games, and that's cool. You know, if you don't have to, then great. If you like to, then great. You know, play how you like to play. But I would like to think that there's more than 200 odd solo and solitaire war games.
I know there are. 15, the solo people are there.
People. So,
some of us really know how to live.
We have Mike, you know, offer to come over and teach them.
So. I honestly, you know, I think there is. I think in the wargaming community, I won't speak for the board game community. I think in the wargaming community that people who say they are solitaire gamers and say they are solo gamers, they're kind of treated as outsiders to the group. And it's, yeah, Jim makes fun, but if you listen to Jim, there's some, it's not just making fun. He's being serious too. And I think, you know, if you listen to Gary's show, some of the guys on there, if you read through the comments in the chat, are very negative towards solitaire gamers to the point of where someone, and I won't mention any names, had stated that if you play a game solo, you're not really playing the game and therefore it doesn't count. It's just like, what?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
What are you talking about?
So get over yourself.
Mike, if you guys weren't so weird, the rest of us wouldn't treat you like outsiders.
I think, though, that there is this... what's the word? What's the right word I'm looking for? It's a stigma. If you're a solitaire gamer, you know, and Jim loves to say, well, you don't have friends, but that's not why you play solitaire games, right?
No, I can play...
It could be a reason.
Anytime I want. In fact, you know, like I have a regular game night, all those things. It's
yeah.
Also, you know what though? Like I actually don't experience that stigma very often anymore. Like it's so normal. Like every Kickstarter, is there going to be solo mode?
Well,
come on, we're here. We're not going anywhere.
Like, if we're getting bigger, if anything, I think solitaire gaming is getting larger.
Also, no, like, if you go look at the one-player guild numbers versus pretty much any other guild except, like, the Dice Tower on BGG, or if you go to Wargamers and then you go to Solitaire Wargamers, you'll see the difference, and the difference is that there are way more solo gamers out there than you could have imagined.
Yeah.
So how do we get them to reply to the damn survey? Come on, Liz.
I do not know. Maybe we, like, slip the survey link into board game boxes throughout the year. Okay.
Well,
hide it in the rule book like a $100 bill.
Give off a random,
maybe it's, you know, random drawing for some, you know, a GMT gift certificate or something.
Yeah, so you could try to lure them in that way. You know, another thing we might consider doing, and this would make it more work for us, which we love, right? Maybe ask the people who are going to fill out this survey in advance, what are some things they would like to see, some questions they have they would like to see answered with this survey? Get them a little more involved.
So something we can definitely do, because as we are recording this, not all of the articles have yet been published. As people are listening to it, some of them have, is we can include a note at the bottom that says, as people are looking at the results, hey, what are some things you think we could have, would have, should have asked? And give us some info on that. And let's see what folks maybe come up with there. You know, again, just drop a note in the comments at the bottom of the article, and that's totally fine. If it's your first time commenting on the site, it may get held for a spam check, but we try to approve those pretty quickly when we get notified of them. So those tend to show up, you know, no more than 24 hours later, usually under 12. But if at first you submit it and it doesn't immediately appear, it's been held for a spam check. Don't freak out. We'll get it posted shortly. Don't just redo it over and over. So, but Mike, I think that's a good point, right? Let's see what the audience might have to say.
Yeah.
All right, guys, this has been fun. You know, if it wasn't fun, we wouldn't keep doing it each year. So, it's always interesting to see what folks come up with. As a closing thought, Mike, do you have a parting thought for the audience at the end of this before we wrap it up here?
Just please keep participating in the survey and let's keep doing the survey because it's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's great.
Mine is go look at the survey, find a game that you haven't heard of and see if you want to play it.
Yeah. Go check it out.
That's why we do this. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, again, my closing thought is not just please continue participating in the survey, but if we get everybody to go find one friend to also fill it out, we double our number of participants next year. And that would be cool. So everybody's just got to go find one friend who is a war gamer who plays games solo or solitaire. And again, it doesn't have to be purpose-built solitaire. If you enjoy just gaming it by yourself, totally fine. But fill that out. Get back to us. Or have a friend fill it out. This is going to happen at the end of the summer every year. That's when we're going to do this, is mid to late July into August, maybe into August. It just depends on sort of when the start dates land. This year we were delayed slightly because Liz was at Gen Con, and so we wanted to let her get through that before we launched the survey for help and promote it. But that's when we're going to launch in July. No later than about the 15th or so, and it's going to happen every summer. So plan for it, prepare for it, get your friends ready for it, and let's everybody go find a friend to also join the fun filling this thing out. We'd really appreciate the support there.
Yeah, this is like those old Avalon Hill cards that were in the box. Like, do you have friends, actual brain power to handle these cool games? Sign them up.
Give us their name and their address.
Yeah. And we're going to put it in the back of the magazine, and y'all can write to each other like little pin pals.
I think we're going to put the calendar invite out there as a downloadable ICS file to add to people's calendar for next year on about the 18th of July. Go respond to this survey and invite a friend. So that way people can go ahead and just put it on their calendar now. That way they've got it. Maybe not. Who knows? Audience, thank you all very much for joining us for this chat through the solo and solitaire wargaming results. Again, as if you're hearing this on the day the podcast was released, then the master list was released yesterday. It's over on the front page of the Dragoon site. You can see it there. Liz has the top 25 geek list up over on Board Game Geek, and so you can see it over there. Over the next 2 weeks or so, you're also going to see a video with some of us discussing this. You're going to see at least two articles worth of some data deep dives where we're going to take a look at some of the things we discussed tonight with the kind of high versus low war game percentage in your diet and the veterans versus rookies war gamers. You know, how long have you been wargaming? You're also going to see a couple of other pieces, some comparisons that we were able to pull out of the data with some pivot tables and so kind of some cross tabs that you'll be able to take a look at. We're going to have all of that information available to you. If you've got some ideas for some questions you'd like to see answered out of the data we have, throw us a note in the comments either here or on one of the articles. We'll try and get that crunched and see what we can share with that. But otherwise, just, you know, we'd love to hear what you think and we'd love to have you participate again next year. Liz, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike, for having me. It's fun every time.
Glad you're back and joining us again. And so as we're doing this, Mike and I are actually reconvening tomorrow night for our next episode that we got to record. So
what?
We're going to do all this again tomorrow. What? Yeah, the audience is going to hear it a week later, but we got to record it tomorrow because that's when we got people available. So audience, thank you very much for joining us. And we'll catch you next time on another episode of Mention and Dispatch.